Thanks very much, Bob. And I'm sorry you all aren't going to get to meet Nina Townsend. She's the new chief of our Occupational Lead Poisoning Prevention Program. She just started this year. We hired her away from Chevron, and she's an experienced industrial hygienist who early on in her career worked in the New York City lead program. So we're very happy to have her. And Susan Payne also, who you're used to seeing here from the lead program, was unable to come at the last minute. So I'm filling in. But as Bob said, we have been working on updating our lead standards in California for longer than I want to acknowledge. And hopefully in my lifetime we'll see a positive result from this. So just summarizing really quickly, kind of the last decade of our efforts, I can't believe it. So, you know, way back before 2007, the ABLE states all were concerned about, the outdated toxicity information used to support the lead standards. And we convened an expert panel to get together and review the science, and that resulted in this 2007 Environmental Health Perspectives article that gets referred to a lot and really laid out these are the effects that Rebecca presented at lower blood lead levels. And then in 2010 and 11, our program made a series of in writing recommendations to CalOSHA. We do have a mandate in our branch to be able to recommend new or improved standards when they're appropriate to our CalOSHA, our state plan OSHA agency. And so we actually took the language of the general industry and the construction standards and marked it up like this is how we would like it to be, and sent that off to CalOSHA. And they did respond positively at that point in time and began our sort of informal public advisory process. The way it's done in California, that CalOSHA will convene a bunch of stakeholder meetings and start to talk about the issues. And sometimes at these meetings, you talk about draft language and get everybody's perspectives on what they think, and that helps sort of shape the draft regulation before it goes into the formal rulemaking process. So to date, they've held 6 public advisory committee meetings and floated a number of drafts. There isn't a current draft posted, but they do have a website with all of the information from the notes from these 6 meetings. And then we also, our initial recommendations didn't have a numeric value for a health-based permissible exposure limit because we were at the time paying for a project that was done at our Cal EPA agency that redid the modeling of the relationship between air lead and blood lead. And that was going to be the basis for our PEL recommendation. And so that was released to the public in 2013. We held a lead symposium that was, webcast. So there was a lot of participation from other states and federal agencies, too. And that's when we presented our PEL recommendation, which I'll talk about in a minute. But first, Nina and Susan wanted to present a little bit of California data. We recently put out a 3-year report of our blood lead data covering 2012 through 2014. So this shows, some of the salient points from that. We had more than 6,000 workers that had blood leads of 5 or higher, which, as Rebecca said, is our new elevated lead blood lead definition. And then this pie chart presents workers who had blood leads above 10. Those are the workers that we actually have the resources to find out where they work and can code their industry and industry sector. This is a pie chart by industry sector. And you can see that 60% of the workers reported with blood leads 10 and higher worked in manufacturing. And this includes, we still have some battery manufacturing, aircraft parts, plumbing fixtures, metal valves, shipbuilding or repair, and lead recovery from scrap, recycling batteries primarily. 14% were in construction, including painters, 7% in wholesale trade, which is where scrap metal wholesalers and some other equipment wholesale wholesalers fall. 6% are in arts, entertainment, and recreation, which includes firing ranges. And then the other industry sectors include some of our public administration, educational research services, a bunch of other things. Some of the highest exposures that we see when we look at the 40 micrograms per deciliter and up lately have been primarily having to do with firearms. And that includes not only the age-old bane of our existence, shooting ranges, but also ammunition manufacturing, gun repair, and firearm instruction. And following all the firearms-related industries, you know, we've seen some of these high exposures in also metal-related industries like scrap handling, as well as painting and construction. So what have we recommended to Cal OSHA? So, you know, related to those adverse health effects at lower levels, we certainly want to see the medical removal protection level reduced. That was actually our first advisory committee meeting, which I guess now is like 2010 or 11, that all that stuff was discussed. And actually, there was generally little disagreement about that. So at that point in time, following on the 2007 EHP article, we proposed an MRP trigger of two blood leads at or above 20 or one blood lead at or above 30. And these little symbols, the check boxes that are in green or red, are NINA's code for we got it. So that was easily agreed upon. So the current Cal OSHA draft, you know, has that as the you know, proposed MRP level. For the permissible exposure limit, when we completed our modeling and put out our recommendation for a health-based PEL, the goal that we were trying to meet were to keep blood leads less than 5 to 10 micrograms per deciliter over a 40-year working lifetime. So the PEL recommendation we gave was, again, a range to cover this 5 to 10, and it ranged from a half a microgram per cubic meter to 2.1 microgram per cubic meter. And again, as a health-based PEL, and expressed as an 8-hour time-weighted average. You can see the little red box there. Nope, we didn't get that. Cal OSHA, like any OSHA program, has to consider technological and economic feasibility when they go with their numbers. And so their draft now, and they haven't really explained why yet. When the regulations package comes out, there will be a justification of how they reached these numbers that are in the draft, but it basically says 10 micrograms per cubic meter for the draft PEL, so going from 50 down to 10, and then the draft action level that they're using is at 2, and so it's dropping from 30 down to 2. So that's how it currently stands. Another thing that we wanted in these new and revised standards was a trigger for a blood lead testing program requirement that would not be dependent on what the air lead levels are. We've just seen too many cases where there's ingestion and high blood leads and you can't find any lead in the air. So that concept really was supported by a lot of the attendees at the advisory committee meetings. So, so there's a green check box. We think we're getting that. But it really stimulated all kinds of discussions about, like, well, okay, then what's the trigger going to be? And so the trigger in general industry currently is altering or disturbing any lead-containing materials that have at least a half a percent of lead or greater, or torch cutting any scrap metal for at least 8 hours or more in a 30-day period. And I think there's like one or two sort of very small use exemptions in the current draft language. And again, the regs package isn't out yet, so it might be tweaked a little bit. But, you know, people came out of the woodwork who were sort of low lead users or low lead disturbers. Like, you know, the police officers that have to qualify and they shoot at a range for, you know, a certain amount of time. You know, so there were a lot of industries that wanted carve-outs from this trigger. The construction trigger is pretty much what's in the construction standard. You know, that whole concept of having trigger tasks that, you know, then trigger other protections of the standard. So that's much more, you know, what you're used to seeing. If you are altering or disturbing lead paint, you would be roped in to require a required blood lead testing program with a little more frequency than is in the current standard. Finally, the fourth thing we asked for was more frequent blood lead testing. This idea that you test every 6 months when you don't really know, especially you often don't know the air lead levels or they're changing all the time, you know, just really wasn't adequate. So the current, what we asked for, and by the green check you can see, it's in the current draft, is for the first 3 months of employment, monthly blood lead testing, so that you could see early on when somebody is assigned to lead work, you know, are they getting exposed enough that their blood leads start creeping up? And, you know, and again, that's an indication, you know, something's got to be done to better control these exposures so that, you know, they don't keep getting up to the MRP level. So people kind of got that idea. So this, yeah.
Was there any consideration of having it based on the results of blood lead tests?
Yeah, it is stepped up. Like if you can, so testing every month for the first 3 months, and if you continue to stay below 10, then every 6 month testing. If you get a blood lead above 10, then the frequency of testing is continued to be more frequent, you know, and then if you're at MRP level, it's monthly.
Even for, I would guess, like when you put a trigger as a trigger evaluation that they may not meet any of the other triggers, but if you have five workers that test with levels above a certain amount, then that triggers them as the action level.
I guess I'm not quite getting what you're saying. We didn't want, you know, some people wanted carve-outs from a blood lead testing program if they tested a few workers and they were all really, really low, like nobody else would have to be tested. We didn't really buy that idea. You know, you can have a handful of workers and they do things differently and their exposures are going to be different. And then there are really small workplaces, too, that only have a couple of exposed people. So a lot of proposals that people made just weren't a feasible regulation to try to implement. You know, again, we're dealing with all these different industries that have all these different needs. So finding regulatory language that works is really challenging, I think. So we went back to our registry because, you know, we got this new proposed MRP definition, and looked in our registry, you know, again, to address some of these feasibility, you know, arguments that industry was raising. So this plot shows how many workers in our registry, so like out of those 6,000 workers that are five or higher, how many meet the proposed MRP definition of 1 at 30 or 2 at 20? And they just go, we looked at the whole pile of workers year by year by year. So you can see from 2010, it's, you know, it's pretty dropping pretty steadily. The last 2 years of data, it's creeping up a little bit, and we haven't completed all the QC of those years of registry data and haven't really had a chance to look at what's causing that, like, creeping up. We do, in 2015, we had an increase in workers who had two blood leads between 20 and 30. And in 2016, we had an increase in workers with blood leads of above 30. But we haven't really looked at that to figure out what's going on in the industries. You know, another thing that's really prevalent in our registry, I don't know if you all experience the same thing, is the same workers don't get tested every year. It's like every year it's a just different constellation. There's so much intermittent testing other than in the battery industry where they're like really regular. So sometimes it, you know, kind of makes, it's hard to make sense of your data. So, yeah, go ahead.
What industries are represented in that previous slide?
All of them.
Well, I mean, but what is generally, where are most of your reports coming from?
The that meet that.
But there's probably a fair amount in the battery industry, construction, other manufacturing industries, you know, firing range stuff, kind of the usual.
I'm surprised it's such a low number. California is a big place.
Yeah, we have a lot of, well, we have 6,000 workers in the registry for a three-year period that are five or higher, but many of them are low. And then we have a whole lot of other, we have thousands and thousands that are between 5 and 10 that we're assuming most of them are workers, but, you know, many of them are not. But you're right, these don't reflect probably the worst, a lot of the worst lead jobs never get a blood lead test, so they're not in here. So that, you know, that was a lot of the discussion. Okay, if you're going to make all of us do blood lead testing, what is that going to uncover? And we don't know until we are able to actually make that happen.
Sorry, Ruth.
Yeah.
What time frame are the two blood lead greater than 20? Is that within a certain time, like 3 months?
I'm spacing on that.
It's okay. It'll come out eventually. I'm just curious, you know, how long you had to wait for that second 20.
Yeah, maybe while one of them is speaking, I'll pull that up and check. So I don't want to give you the wrong information. Okay, so so the next job that Kalosha has to do as part of preparing their regulatory package is, you know, they have the draft regulation, they have this justification thing showing how they arrived at all the changes that they're making, and then the other part is the fiscal impact. And you know, to try to do some hand-waving estimates, of course, they come to us and say, well, how many lead-exposed workers are there in California? And how many employers? And in what industries? And you're like, we wish we knew that. So we embarked on this many-month effort to come up with something. And we knew it was going to be, an estimate. But we figured we were as educated enough to make an estimate as anybody else, so we would do this. So this is how we sort of did this. And probably at next year's ABLES, Susan will come and present this in much more detail. But basically, we did a four-step process. First was we identified industries that potentially use or disturb lead. So we obviously used our own data. And then we used the NAICS list for the National Emphasis Program for lead, which comes from all the ABLE states. So we figured that was all good data. And then we just eyeballed the construction and manufacturing codes to see if there was anything that sort of got missed, and we threw in a few more. So then who's employed in these industries and how many employers are there? So we relied on the quarterly census of employment and wages data. We had to, because we wanted to slice and dice it in different ways by public sector, private sector, size of business, and all that, because Kalosha needs to answer a lot of questions about those kinds of things. We had to purchase the QC, a data run from our employment development department. And there is some data masking in that so that everything, you know, so that certain identities are not revealed. So step three was to actually estimate for each of these individual NAICS codes what percent of, you know, some of them are very broad, some of them are very narrow, and, you know, it's not according to lead use. So we had to just decide what percent of employers do we think use lead, and then what percent of their employees do we think would have jobs that expose them to lead. And this is the big, like, hand-waving part of it, but we just used professional judgment. We had three IHs and our epidemiologists sitting in a room, putting percentages. Then the fourth step was to actually use those percentages. So it would be like multiplying the number percent of establishments times the percent of workers times the percent of total employment in each of those industries, and then summing everything up. So you can see at the bottom, this is what we came up with. 74,500, and we put some zeros at the end to emphasize this is not like exact. 74,500 construction workers, 86,900 general industry workers. These numbers represent, so those 74,000 workers are 13% of all construction workers. We also looked at how FedOSHA had done it for the construction standard, too. There was some information available. And then for general industry, 1% of all the general industry workers in our lead-using industries ended up, you know, being in as estimated as lead exposed, and that is 86,000. So that's enough for them to use. They were happy with that. And then the next steps in this whole process are CalOSHA will submit their pre-rulemaking package to the Occupational Safety and Health Standards Board. That's who votes on our standard. There are 7 members of the Standards Board. Bob used to be a member. And they will vote on the proposals, ultimately. But we encountered a new twist, and this just really came up in California. I don't really know where it came from, but not, and it doesn't only apply to occupational safety and health, but any major regulation defined as costing over $50 million has to go through a huge, complicated fiscal assessment that never happened before. Our first experience with this was our new process safety management revised package. This really requires CalOSHA to contract out to somebody who knows how to do this stuff, and it's really delaying things. So we're really stuck at this point right now. When they have their pre-rulemaking package ready, it'll go back and forth to the Standards Board. The Standards Board staff could kick it back and say, oh, this looks unclear, fix this, send it back. But then it will go out for public comment for a 45-day period. If there is enough comment that would cause CalOSHA to revise the standard, then there will be another short period, another public comment period. You know, and then the Standards Board will vote. As I said, there are 7 members. There's currently 1 vacancy, and so 4 members have to approve it, and then it becomes a reg. So I'm going to stop there, and I'm waiting anxiously to hear about I'll just put up here. This is Nina and Susan's contact information. You can stay in touch with them. And, you know, at this point, Washington may be pull ahead of us. We'll see.
Do you want to take a question or two now, and then we'll return it to our group?
Todd?
Barbara, I have a question about exposure limits. So, having spent a lot of time at the table with our state OSHA facility, the most difficult point that we've had is that we can't really agree on is exposure limits. There are exposure limits in our draft rule, but this is came to the table using and recommending what California had generated in the 2013 modeling effort for exposure limits. And, you know, they came to the table not wanting to change exposure limits at all. They were very eager to change medical removal, protection levels, and all kinds of other things in the rule. But they did not want to change that. So I'll talk about who was on this team.
Great.
And their reason was, and kind of still is, that they believe it will kill the rule among stakeholders once rolled out. They think that stakeholders will be open to these reduced blood lead level cut points, but not the exposure levels. So, you know, I've looked through other literature, and most of it's old. Most of it's kind of small cohorts done at a time when levels were high. So I guess I just want to ask, can you recommend anything that you may take to your state OSHA that we could take to ours to argue in favor of these lower exposure limits?
Well, I, we sort of encountered the same thing at the very beginning. Like I said, our first advisory committee was about changing the MRP level. And people could get that. You know, they could get, oh, having a blood lead above 40, yeah, that's bad. But how, you know, I mean, the biggest point is we're supposed to be preventing harmful exposures. So if you're not going to require the air lead levels to be lower, what do you expect? You're going to get high blood leads are going to start creeping up, and then you know, and then the lead gets socked into your, you know, bones and stuff. So a blood lead isn't even, you know, it creates this, you know, kind of legacy problem. And then I think originally, even when the 1978 standard was passed, you know, the unions then at the time argued, you can't just keep cycling workers in and out. That's just, you just can't do that. I think where we had the most trouble was with the abrasive blasting industry, because if you bring air lead levels, the PEL, down really low, you get to the point where you can't, there isn't a respirator that is good enough. So we have gotten opposition from particularly abrasive blasters. Yeah, they wanted loopholes, and then the battery industry wanted loopholes because, you know, again, we can't get it that low. People are already in respirators all the time in the battery plants. But, you know, ultimately, we ended up talking about a lot of other provisions, getting a lot of consensus. And, you know, I don't know how they picked 10 and 2. I think they just, you know, wanted to, you know, they knew they weren't going to go down to the health-based level. So I think they just kind of picked something in the meat. So it's, you know, the PEL is a 1/5 reduction, and or a 10th from 50 down to 10. And I think they just floated that to see what would happen. And, you know, maybe to IHs, you know, we kind of have in our head what constitutes a 50 microgram. You know, it's all numbers to people. So, and the industry, whenever they started saying, we can't meet that, you know, and Kalosha would say, well, give us your air monitoring data. Show us. And they don't want to share their air monitoring data. So, you know, that kind of loses some ground for them on we can't meet that kind of a thing. We don't have a lot of air monitoring data. They asked us because we don't do a lot of it. Employers are supposed to do it, so we just, you know, kind of say they should be doing it, and we're going to look at the blood leads. But if they're not going to share their data and put it out there and, you know, show they have a reason to worry about feasibility, then Kalosha should just kind of says, all right, well, then we're proceeding. So good luck with that. Anybody else? Yep.